the last phase. Vanished into havoc. Unfathomable mind. No beacon. No sea.
You heard on the last show, I gave you some homework. I said, you have to watch Annihilation. Did you do it? Did you join me on that journey? And, you know, I know my preferences and taste and film and music are, you know, they don't line up with everybody, and that's okay. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Annihilation is the modern day 2001 A Space Odyssey. And may I add, it's much more entertaining in the process as well. I know that's a bold statement, but as we decode the symbolism and analyze this film of what the heck was going on in this movie, you also will come to the conclusion that it was an initiatory experience, just like 2001 A Space Odyssey. Now, if you haven't watched Annihilation yet, I can't beg you enough. Please, please go watch it before you listen to this, because needless to say, spoilers of the plot will be had. And to add to that, I went ahead, a little something I did for you, a little something for you, a little something for me. I read the first book of Annihilation, because it's actually a trilogy, right? I read the first book because books 2 and 3 were too long for me to get through. I wanted to get this out to you. I've been eager to talk to you about this film. So I read the first book, and then I read a couple of like interviews, and it sounded like the director's vision for this movie, he read the books but then didn't reference them again. He just went ahead and, you know, shot the film. And shout out to Jimmy the Jackhammer. Me and Jimmy had some conversations about this film. So big ups there. So if you're sensitive to ruining the film plot or the first book of the trilogy, turn back now. For the rest of you, we're gonna buckle up and head into the wormhole, as it were. Because, you know, this movie, I watched it. The first time I watched it, it blew my mind. And I don't know what took me so long to watch this movie. I had a lot of people telling me to watch it. One person offered me money to watch it and do an analysis. And I thought, all right, I'll watch the movie, you know. And I'm not going to take the money for the record. It was my pleasure to watch this movie. But it didn't look that interesting to me, the trailer. So I was like dragging my feet on watching it. And then it was on Amazon Prime. So I thought, okay, let's do that. And I watched the first half on my phone whilst doing some other things. And it hit me. And I thought, this movie is really something else. I got to finish this movie on a real TV. So I watched it on the TV, and man, I don't want to overhype the movie for you if you haven't seen it, but incredible. It's you know, I've watched it 3 times in the last, I don't know, 2 weeks, right? And sometimes you gotta let films sort of marinate, and a few years from now we'll determine how great this movie truly was. I'm going to say it's, you know, for me personally, easy top 10, maybe even top 5. I don't have a top 5 written out, so I can't tell you where it really comes in at, but it's phenomenal. If you're into the time, if you're into the kind of weird stuff that we're all into, right? You're with me on this podcast, so we share similar interests. If you like sci-fi, if you like a little bit of horror, then this is your movie. We're going to talk about, I'm going to give you an analysis of this film, because there's various ways you could interpret this thing. Talk about science, talk about self-destruction, dissolving into the void, We're going to talk about Adam and Eve. That's right, Adam and Eve. It's in the film. Symbolism of the occult initiation. And in the conclusion, the alien way out. So, the thing about this movie, and one last little preface comment before we get into this, I had to take the time to sort of type this up, because I don't want to miss anything, right? But the movie, when you first watch it, your mind has so many kind of unanswered questions, and the book kind of feels similar. You know, you're not going to get many more answers out of the book, just to let you know, because that's what I thought. I thought, well, let me read the book. And maybe they give you more answers in books 2 and 3. I don't know. But book 1, it felt very similar in the sense that you're left hanging a little bit. And as we talked about with Bird Box, the sense of wonder is very important, is it not? But in book 1, I pulled a quote out for us to take a look at. Some questions will ruin you if denied the answers long enough. Some questions will ruin you if denied the answers long enough. Is that a deep statement or not, right? And that kind of goes in line with this idea of wandering. And to me, ultimately, it comes back to this idea that we cannot know all there is to know. We don't have the mind of God to be able to understand the entire creation. So I think there's an element of that, and in the science religion that we exist in today, they want answers for everything. Everything's got to have an answer. And to me, I think there's beauty in not knowing all the answers. Anyways, so another idea I want to throw out there is that the theories behind the meaning of this film, because this analysis I'm about to give you is, I'm going to say 95% about the film, and there's a couple statements here and there about the book, because the book didn't give me a whole lot more difference than the film did. And I know people say the books are always better than the film, but and the book is good. I really enjoyed it. I'm not into fiction, but it kept my attention the whole time, and it might have been just because I watched the movie and was so enamored by it and had so many questions that I was really paying attention. But the film was just outstanding. But I think, so we're going to talk mostly about the film, okay? And I think that the theories behind the meaning of this film could be a bit subjective, okay? It's kind of a meta statement there. But after watching it a few times, doing look, I didn't listen to any other sort of analyses of the film. Because I tried to do that. I went on the podcast search engine there for Apple, and I looked up Annihilation, and there were maybe four, I listened to maybe four different podcasts that were sort of film-themed podcasts, and all they did was kind of regurgitate the plot, and I was waiting for them to give me something, and they didn't. You know, I would give it about 15, 20 minutes and try the next show. And I finally gave up and said, whatever. Because as you know, most of the time I'll watch a film or a TV show or whatever, and I generally don't do any research of what other people are saying about it. I usually I'll lay out my ideas. Sometimes that's just what I go with and move on. Sometimes with films like Annihilation, where there's a lot of questions left hanging, I like to go online and kind of look around and see what other people are saying, and so I can, maybe it'll clarify, like maybe I got it wrong somewhere, right? But with this one, literally the only background research I did was I checked out about 4 podcasts. They all sucked because they're not as good as this one, right? Anyways, and I didn't really do a lot of online researching. I read an interview with the director. As you'll see, I think I pulled a quote out in this analysis. But anyways, I think there's a lot of subjective elements of this film, and I think you could take from it what you want, which is really cool, right? I've, like I said, I watched it 3 times, read a couple of interviews with the director, And I think that there is still this sort of hanging question mark of this movie, which is beautiful, right? Kanye West said the beauty's in the imperfections, right? Brother Kanye. I think he said that. Someone said that. He probably repeated it, right? Anyways, I'll offer up my theory on what I see going on and how it plays into the Illuminati agenda of Hollywood. So, the idea here, when I say it, is similar to 2001: A Space Odyssey, is that it incorporates esoteric doctrine. Esoteric's a funny word, isn't it? I used to say esoteric. How do you say it? Because I said esoteric when I narrated the audio book for The Dark Path, and someone on the reviews gave me a poor review because they said I didn't know how to pronounce words correctly, and they pulled out that specific example, and I've conformed. I now say esoteric because I've heard a lot of people say esoteric, but I have heard people say it the other way, just to defend a little bit. But I think this film and 2001: A Space Odyssey are similar in that they use the esoteric doctrine and the sci-fi fantasy to initiate the masses. Because the sci-fi fantasy films, your mind is open to these new ideas, these kind of foreign, crazy ideas, more so than the other films. Now, the fact that this movie seemed to receive the lukewarm reviews demonstrates to me the sad state of affairs in our current world, our idiocracy, if you will. Because I think people are more, honestly, they're more excited to see yet another nauseating superhero film than something like this that'll make them think. Or, I don't know about make them think, but it's got some sort of some elements that make you sit back and consider what is happening in this movie, because it's not very clear. Now, you could take several paths through this film. I laid this out in a particular way I'd like to explore with you. I felt like the full novels, the trilogy, that if I read books 2 and 3, but I didn't want to make you wait 6 more months for me to get through those books to talk to you about it. Maybe it opens it up more, right? And just a simple rehash, because I know you've seen this movie. If you made it this far in the show, you've seen the movie, right? Okay. The characters in the film, there's two main characters in this film. You've got Lena the Plug, played by Natalie Portman. I'm just kidding, just Lena. I don't know if you follow No Jumper. Anyways. There's Lena, played by Natalie Portman. She is the biologist from the book. She's the protagonist of the film. Then she's got her husband, Kane. He plays your standard stoic military man, played by Oscar Isaac. And, he's pushing that toxic masculinity. No emotions, no feelings. Stuff it down real good like a real man, Oscar Isaac, he was in Ex Machina, and I think this movie was it created by the same guy? Yeah, it was Alex Garland was the director of Annihilation. He also did Ex Machina, which is another sort of cool sci-fi, film about what could happen to humanity. He also did Sunshine, which is a pretty cool movie, too. Kind of scary, man. This guy's got a scary mind. So why are we talking about him? Oh, yeah, Oscar Isaac, because he was in Ex Machina, too. Anyways, first section, science as the new god. If you were to overlook the religious tones of this film, I think you're doing a great discredit to it. I think there are clear references to questioning the intentions of God in this film. There's a disturbing reenactment of the great creation. And here's the hint for that. It's the extraterrestrial Garden of Eden that I'm going to talk about later. But I want to plant this seed first into you. Dr. Ventress is, okay, so you remember, right? The biologist is played by Lena. There's four women that go into the Shimmer. Those are the main sort of characters that you see at the beginning. One of them is Dr. Ventress. She's the psychologist. In the book, they don't go by names. They go by titles. So she's the psychologist, Dr. Ventress. Sounds like a G.I. Joe character. But she's explaining the Shimmer to Lena, and she makes a curious statement. She says that the existing theories on what the Shimmer is are that it's either a religious event, extraterrestrials, or a higher dimension. So she tells you flat out what the three options are, which I didn't see in the book, by the way. Now, the curious thing here is that all three of these items are interrelated when you investigate the pursuits of the occult. Some of the theorists argue that there are actual plans to depict a false alien invasion so that they can consolidate government and have a one world order to control us all. And this new world order is the final straw in eliminating the organized religions of the world, primarily the Abrahamic religions. And out of those, primarily Christianity, which Jack Parsons called the lying hypocrisy, right? These NASA scientists wanted nothing more than to get rid of Christianity and religion altogether. Lena and Kane, in one scene, they're in bed and they're staring up at the moon. And they actually have a conversation about whether or not God makes mistakes. Lena takes the position that God does, in fact, make mistakes. And she actually, I think she says the words, should he exist? And we saw the same exact situation in Prometheus with the couple. But it was the other way around. The man believed in God and the woman did not. And that was the film where we saw the alien abortion, a concept we're going to talk about for this movie too. And Lena's referencing, she's the scientist of the couple there, right? So she's referencing this idea of entropy and the second law of thermodynamics. And the second law of thermodynamics basically says that everything breaks down eventually. It says that systems will eventually go to higher states of disorder. That's what she's talking about. Now, why is she talking about that? Well, that is one of the themes of Annihilation. In fact, Dr. Ventress, when she goes down in the lighthouse to the underground layer or whatever that is, she says, it's the last phase, vanished into havoc, unfathomable mind, and now beacon, now sea. And then she basically obliterates. She is annihilated.
What was it we said? That I needed to know what was inside the lighthouse. That moment's passed. It's inside me now.
What's inside you?
It's not like us. It's unlike us. Or if it wants, but it will grow until it encompasses everything. Our bodies and our minds will be fragmented into their smallest parts until not one part remains. Annihilation.
Sorry. There was a tap, tap, tapping at my window, and it's dark out. I don't think it was at my window per se, but all I could think about was Salem's Lot, where that demonic vampire's floating around that kid's window. Do you remember that? Anyways, self-destruction, part two here. This is my second idea. The first idea was a very short sort of seed planting for later. We're talking about self-destruction, dissolution into the void. This is, again, a main theme here. It's very overt, very clear that that's a theme of this film. Dr. Ventress, she does say, our bodies and our minds will be fragmented into their smallest parts until not one part remains, annihilation. That's right before she turns into the being of light and dissolves. Now, when I first realized that this film is going to use the term annihilation to refer to this process of self-destruction, I couldn't help but draw upon my past interests. Well, I say past as if I don't listen anymore, but Nine Inch Nails, Trent Reznor, his album The Downward Spiral, Spiral, is a conceptual album, and it's about a man who struggles with these themes of nihilism and self-destruction, and he kind of loses his mind, and he ultimately commits suicide at the end of the album. And it was a very disturbing album, and, you know, it's kind of always stuck with me for some reason. And also, a little bonus, if in case you haven't had enough of my never-ending references to Charles Manson, because I think he is 6 degrees of separation from everything in pop culture. Trent Reznor actually recorded The Downward Spiral at 1050 Cielo Drive, as you know, was the home of Polanski and Sharon Tate, where the Tate murders happened. He bought the house and recorded the album there, called it the Pig Studios, claims it was not in reference to the fact that they wrote Pig and Blood on the front door. And also I think he's a little disingenuous with himself, because he took the front door with him, because he was the last one in the house. And after he moved out of it, they destroyed it. But he took the front door with him and moved it to New Orleans. Anyways, the lyrics on, there's a track called The Becoming on The Downward Spiral, and has a very curious connection to Annihilation. Okay, I'm going to read this. This is going to take a minute, so hang in there. I beat my machine. It's a part of me. It's inside of me. I'm stuck in this dream. It's changing me. I am becoming the me that you know. He had some second thoughts. He's covered with scabs and he's broken and sore. The me that you know doesn't come around much. That part of me isn't here anymore. All pain disappears. It's the nature of my circuitry. Drowns out all I hear. There's no escape from this, my new consciousness. That me that you know used to have feelings, but the blood has stopped pumping and he's left to decay. The me that you know is now made up of wires. And even when I'm right with you, I'm so far away. I can try to get away, but I've strapped myself in. I can try to scratch away the sound in my ears. I can see it killing away all my bad parts. I don't want to listen, but it's all too clear. Hiding backwards inside of me, I feel so unafraid. Any hold a little tighter, I might just slip away. It won't give up. It wants me dead. God damn this noise inside my head. Now, the lyrics there, they suggest that this protagonist of The Downward Spiral is losing sanity and an entire grip on reality. And this mask that he puts on for society, because we all put masks on for different groups that we're hanging out with, right? Different mask at home than you wear to work, than you wear to family functions or whatever. And he's saying that some underlying creature ultimately takes over and pushes him over the brink to his eventual suicide. Now, Nine Inch Nails also had a set of band music videos for their prior album called Broken. And again, it shows, if you find the videos online, they were banned, and then you can still find them in certain ways online. It shows a similar progression, and might I add, it's very disturbing. So if you're queasy, do not watch these videos. But it's a progression of nihilism. As a man, he straps himself into this alien-esque H.R. Giger torture dungeon before being liquefied, and his carbon allows the new life to form from the dirt beneath the chair. And the reason we're exploring Nine Inch Nails is because I feel the themes of their early albums reflected a lot of the darkness behind Annihilation. I mean, of course, Annihilation even has the word nihilism in there, right? And all the women that enter the Shimmer are experiencing some kind of pain or loss in their own lives. Radic, she cuts herself to feel alive. Dr. Ventress is dying of cancer. Lena, she's got a marriage crumbling apart. In the film, it's successful in showing us how God's creation of man and woman has this fundamental error. And I put the error in quotes, because that's the argument they're making. And, you know, in the bedroom dialogue between Lena and Kane, Lena mentions how God does, in fact, make mistakes, which runs contrary to what Kane was saying, because Kane actually called her out for being a heretic. And then Lena goes further. She's, again, citing the scientific doctrine of the second law of thermodynamics, talking about this, how all systems degrade over time. And Lena says that aging comes from a fault in our genes. She's implying that there's potential for some form of entity to become immortal if it did not have this error. In the film, she says, "Isn't self-destruction coded into each of our cells?" And I believe that's during a part where she's talking with Dr. Ventress, not Kane. So you can tell she's consumed with this idea, right? Now, the concept of self-destruction, it's quite intriguing, as I believe it explains this fascination with the dark arts that so many of us have. There's something that occurs when we reach this level of comfort and then make choices that put that comfort at risk. People do it all the time. Whether it's having affairs, being late to work, which is a self-destructive pattern, or maybe even drug abuse. Our minds have this uncanny nature to find and create problems when none exist. We've evolved from the days where we had to be constantly on alert from predators and other kinds of dangers, and our minds are somehow acclimating to this by creating new issues. And Lena is suffering from the same situation. She seems to have a pretty good life, but she goes ahead and has an affair. She takes it a step further. She goes on this suicide mission into the Shimmer. And I think her mistress. Anyways, the guy she's sleeping with, she's cucking Kane with, he says it best in the film. He tells her, "It's not me you hate, it's yourself." True words never spoken, my friend. Another example, when Kane makes it to the lighthouse, he receives his alien clone, which is we're going to talk about later. I know that's the big reveal, right? And he is questioning who he truly was or is. He's referencing how he's losing his mind with suicide as the only remaining option, just like the protagonist from Downward Spiral. And of course, you know, if you recall, in case you're getting confused at this part, this is Lena makes it to the lighthouse and she's reviewing the footage that Kane had left behind. He's already dead. And Kane says to the camera, he says, "I thought I was a man. I had a life. People called me Kane, and now I'm not so sure. If I wasn't Kane, what was I? Was I you? Were you me? My flesh moves like liquid. My mind is just cut loose. I can't bear it. You ever seen a phosphorus grenade go off?" And then boom. Boom, Wooly Pete. Anyways, we'll revisit this idea about destroying one's ego in the conclusion. But the next concept we need to talk about is this new Adam and Eve. Okay. I think it's perhaps the wildest idea, but it's very true. Cain and Lena are the new Adam and Eve. They are the predecessors to the new world. They are alien prototypes, and they both depart from the Shimmer. That's the aliens' Garden of Eden. And they enter the sort of world of the mundane to procreate and make a new realm for this new god, an extraterrestrial force. They are looking to mutate or destroy God's creation of mankind and replace it with these further evolved entities. These new entities may have these capabilities that Lena so desperately wants to become immortal, fulfilling all these occult fantasies. They all want to live forever. And I'm not saying I don't want to live forever too, but do we? Do we want that? I don't know. Okay, so the Shimmer, it demonstrates this potential for immortality because it's unlike God's creation, which is riddled with the flaws, right? According to Lena. And we know it's a different realm because the time spent there is all askew. They get there and they wake up and they've been there 5 days or 2 weeks or whatever. The compass can't pick up the cardinal directions because time is indeed a man-made construct in this realm. So it's of no use in the Shimmer. Time, the construct of materials and measurements, the Saturnian forces, those are all man-made things. Very basic, base frequency things. And in the Shimmer, this is an area that's actively refracting and manipulating all things inside of it, all forms of life, DNA included. It's scrambling our world in order to accommodate itself. It's a real alpha move by the aliens. They're changing everything to suit their needs. They're perfecting it one piece of life at a time until it finds the man and the woman that can successfully acclimate to the environment. Cain and Lena. Now, this film takes great pains to convey to the viewer that Henrietta Lacks plays a critical role in the development of genetic research. We know this because there's a discussion on the film about HeLa cells. And if you look, Lena is reading a book called The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. So let's take a look. Why is Miss Lacks in this film? Well, and I'm not going to pretend I knew this stuff, all right? I had to look it up. Henrietta Lacks, she was an African-American woman who died from cancer. But she is famous because the scientist took her cancerous cells without her awareness or acceptance at all. Just stole them from her, basically. Because apparently that was the practice at the time as their defense for doing this. And, I mean, we're talking, this is like the 1950s-ish, something like that, 60s. And they successfully made this line of cells that could replicate, which was something they couldn't do before. So all of these other scientists could now use the Henrietta Lacks cancerous cells for genetic research. This was the holy grail for these genetic scientists because they were the first and only cells that could be reproduced and stay alive long enough to conduct testing. Because prior to that, all the cells would just die out before any kind of valuable testing could be completed. Now, Miss Lacks, her cells would be reproduced and shipped all over the world for scientific research, which is what gave us the vaccine for polio. So everyone who's got the vaccine for polio has got some of Henrietta Lacks' cells inside of them. Now, her family, was never even notified that her cells were used in so many experiments, and it raised a ton of privacy concerns, including up to in 2013, German researchers publicly released a DNA genome sequencing of these HeLa cells without even asking the family. So the point here is that the HeLa cells are a piece of Henrietta Lacks that will live forever, raising the concerns of the family if she's truly resting in peace. She is basically immortal. A piece of her is immortal. A lot of ethical questions to consider there, right? And just on some side notes, there's a film on HBO. I didn't watch it. About Henrietta Lacks, starring Oprah Winfrey. I tried to listen to, I think it was Radio Lab, had a show about Henrietta Lacks, and the millennial ADD meter was off the chart because they were, you know how these podcasts will have like, they splice the voices together. So like, I don't know how to describe it to you, but you know what I'm saying. They'll have like three people talking at the same time, but they take turns and they chop it up. You'll know what I'm talking about when you listen to it. It was too much. So anyways, this film, back to Annihilation. There's a terrifying sequence in there where the Croco Bear and the giant elongated skull, he's an ancient alien, okay, is heard emanating the voice of the slain expedition member, Cassie Shepard. It's probably the most terrifying part of the movie, to be honest. The elongated skull made me laugh, though. All I could think about was David Childress, you know, from Ancient Aliens. Why is the skull so long? Must be an alien. Josie Raddick, she is the character played by Tessa Thompson. She talks to Lena. She's referring to the Croco Bear sequence. And she talks about how awful it would be to have a part of you that's frightened and forced to continue living forever, referring to Cassie Shepard. Because Cassie Shepard is one of the four girls, and she died because Croco Bear ate her. But it seems that Croco Bear had a bit of Cassie's consciousness in her, sort of talking, and it's screaming for help. Oh, it's terrifying. Give me nightmares. Okay. But what the purpose of this is to draw an analogy to Henrietta Lacks. Same idea. Because she was in fear, I'm sure, when she was getting tested for cancer. And that's the similar idea here, right? A piece of her lives on forever. This theme of immortality is pervasive in this film. It shows the force of the shimmer and its ability to propagate and extend life and consciousness of all who come in contact with it. And we see this play out symbolically in the film when Lena becomes the alien entity. She has the forearm tattoo of the Ouroboros infinity symbol, which is a double reference to the symbol for eternal life. The Ouroboros, as you know, is the circular snake, the serpent, that is talking about sort of being reborn, the recycling, and then that's the Ouroboros. And then you got the infinity symbol, which again means the same thing. So it's like a double reference. It's being re-enlightened and reborn is what that tattoo means. And you got to look for it in the film. It's not super obvious how that goes down, but it does go down. We're going to talk about that in a bit here. But there's a scene at the base camp where Lena is talking about how the mutations in the shimmer get stronger as one gets closer to the lighthouse. She says that there were corruptions and duplicate of form. She looks down at the Ouroboros infinity tattoo and says, "Echoes." Again, this is a reference to the replicating energies of the shimmer and its abilities to transfer consciousness to achieve immortality. Because transferring consciousness is part of the agenda. That's why Google's got a patent for it. That's why Facebook wants to steal your data. They want to make a digital consciousness of you and transfer it to different hosts. Believe that. They want to keep a copy of that file. That's what some people argue the Ancestry and 23andMe and the DNA things is. They're going to keep a copy of you and do things that later they could offer you. Like, hey, you know, 20 years ago you gave us this DNA sample back before you had the chlamydia or whatever, and we could reclone up your whatever. I don't know what I'm talking about, But you know what I'm saying? It's all part of the genetic sort of data bank that these people have that they want to figure out a way to make money off of you. And then there's the immortality aspect to consider. Now, the final dance, because just to zoom out a bit, again, we're talking about this Adam and Eve theory I'm talking about here. The final dance of the film is in the lighthouse, Lena and her alien double. And you recall there was a part where the alien pushes Lena up against the door, the exit of the lighthouse. And to me, I think this is the exact moment it starts to transfer the consciousness. Now, I haven't read this anywhere. This is fully out of my ass. So, but tell me what you think. Hit me on the socials so I don't rate it. You know I don't reply to messages. You see that there's a sequence where it's pushing up against her and something happens. I think that the alien double, we'll call it alien Lena and regular Lena, transfer consciousness. Because after that, they both are exhausted. It's almost like they have sex too, by the way. They both are like exhausted and they fall to the ground from the door there. And that's when alien Lena takes control and forces normal Lena to blow herself up with the Woolly Pete grenade. And you'll see alien Lena sort of has this look of like in a daze, like, I guess I'm going to die now. And then she transfers this flame while she's on fire over to, she goes right to Kane immediately, or Kane's skeleton, I should say. It's almost like she's trying to, I don't know, save him from this shimmer, from this realm. And it ultimately brings the whole lighthouse down. And she takes a, on purpose, goes down into the underbelly there inside the tunnel. Alien Lena then walks out of the shimmer looking like regular Lena to be reunited with alien Kane. And thus they are the Adam and Eve for the alien gods. And the whole shimmer, the curtain falls because it's over. The mission of that meteorite that hits the lighthouse that sparks this whole thing was to create this biosphere in order to find a form of living DNA on this planet, the highest form, the most evolved form, which is the Homo sapiens sapiens, and then procreate from there. It hybridized Kane and Lena so that they can make alien babies. Now, the Adam and Eve idea here, it's this theory of alien gods is what that means. And I argue that is why four women go into the shimmer. This wasn't a movie publicity stunt of woman empowerment. Had nothing to do with that. The shimmer had a way, a sort of consciousness, a way of summoning a female because it needed the feminine nature to procreate with Cain. It already had the male alien form. It needed a female. And we saw the failures. It learned from its failures. The shimmer learned from its failures. It failed to impregnate the soldiers from Kane's unit. Do you recall? I don't know how you could not, but do you recall the image of that Giger-esque alien tentacle swirling around inside of the soldier's guts? Kane puts his hand right on it. Ugh. It was arguably trying to impregnate another man, and it didn't understand that that's not how this worked. I mean, maybe, I don't know. We see the concepts of this impregnation, though, in many movies, many forms of entertainment. Will you see this? It is talking about this desire to hybridize and procreate with the alien race. Hitler wanted to do it. The vril society wanted to do it. It's very disturbing. Films like Alien, Alien had the chestburster, which came out the stomach. You had the Alien Covenant, where the woman who ironically said she didn't believe in God. Or was she the one that believed? No, she's the one that believed in God, Elizabeth Shaw. And she went into the machine and got an abortion and it aborted the alien fetus out of her. And all this stuff, by the way, comes from the mind of H.R. Giger, this dark idea of the alien sex stuff. That's what the movie Species was based off of. The guy dabbled into the dark arts. I've got a whole analysis on H.R. Giger. I think I called it the dark superstar of the occult, H.R. Giger. You can find it online, IlluminatiWatcher.com. Now, we should note also that the husband's name in the film is Cain, a reference to, obviously, Cain from the Bible, although it's spelled differently. Cain and Abel, of course, known as the sons of Adam and Eve, who further spread hate into God's world when Cain murdered his brother and shed the first drop of blood. Freemasons utilized the name of Tubal Cain. As you recall from my analysis on Sabrina, the Netflix show Sabrina, I did drop that, and I think it was December 2018, if you want to listen to that. You want to talk about some Illuminati symbolism, that Sabrina show was something else. All right, next topic, symbolism of the occult initiation. Now, when the crew gets into the Shimmer, they set up a headquarters inside of an abandoned army post. What was the name of that post, you ask? Fort Emea. Emea? Emea. Now, this is curious to me, because I looked it up, and there does not appear to be a Fort Emea in the real world, which leads me to believe it's a metaphor, because I instantly noticed Maya, M-A-Y-A, in that term. So I looked it up, and I don't see a real Fort Emea, but the term Maya, is used by the Indian cultures to describe an illusionary world, a sort of mist, a fog of a world, of reality. So how curious they end up there, right? Now, deeper into the action, they end up at what appears to be Lena's home. It's very strange. If you watch the film at the beginning, and I've got screenshots of this. I'll share them on my social media feeds. At Isaac Weishaupt on Instagram. At Illuminati Eyes on Twitter. Facebook, it's, you know, same stuff. Isaac Weishaupt, Illuminati Watcher. But you'll see that at the beginning of the film, Cain gets home. Because you recall, Lena was up painting the bedroom, trying to get over this her loss. Alien Cain comes home. He walks in the front door, and he takes a minute to at the bottom of the stairs to look at some framed photos on the wall. Lena is the same exact thing from the same exact camera angle when she's inside of the Shimmer. It's her house. 100%. So how do we explain this? Does that mean this entire experience is an illusion? The only supporting evidence I could use to argue that idea would be the scene where another woman in the group, Anya, she ties up the other three women and she calls Lena a liar. And at this point, Lena flashes back to the time before Cain left, when she was consumed with guilt for lying to him. Now, this guilt is a component of her self-destruction, her annihilation. So, while I don't know that that is the purpose of this whole movie, there's one piece of evidence that maybe this is an illusion. She's just living out an illusion, going on this journey of self-destruction. Now, this third act of the film, it shows Lena traversing the Shimmer in order to get to the lighthouse. And getting to the lighthouse is the element I want to consider here. We've seen this in other films, such as Shutter Island, where the protagonist is fixated on reaching the destination, played by the great Leonardo DiCaprio, one of the best actors of our time. Now, the symbolism of the lighthouse is known as for conveying the path to the initiate, to the character of the story. The character is being initiated by following this lighthouse to its ultimate and final destination. That is Lena's purpose. Now, in the book, we hear that the expeditions, because there's many expeditions that happen into the Shimmer, all of them are given pre-briefings and maps that all focus and are centered on the lighthouse as a central point of focus. So it follows from the book as well. Now in the movie, getting back to the movie, we witness this terrifying climax of the film as Lena arrives at the lighthouse, takes the final step of her journey into this underground tunnel. Now the symbolism of going underground is very important in occult doctrine. You've heard this before from me. You've heard this before and you'll hear it again. Because going underground represents the initiate dying and being reborn into this new enlightened entity. Enlightened in the ways of the occult, the secret teachings. Now the catalyst for this new entity for Lena is when Dr. Ventress annihilates. It opens up this colorful portal, which ultimately absorbs a drop of Lena's blood from her right eye. Symbolism of the all-seeing eye. Again, it's probably the most common reference to one's enlightenment of the knowledge and understanding of the hidden dark arts, the occult. So, that is exactly what Lena's going through, is an occult initiation. Now, final section I want to talk about, and this is going to, we're going to talk about aliens here, we're going to sum up everything here, and I'm going to give you my best take on what the hell is happening in this movie. This first chapter of the book is, when you read the book, it's, the first chapter is titled Initiation. And that's very accurate because I believe that that's what this film is about. It's all about Lena's transmutation. It's an alchemical process where the initiate goes through a full-blown transformation or enlightenment. Now, of course, in reality, we all change over time. Change is inevitable. It's undeniable. But it's the mastery of this process that the occultists are obsessed over. This, to me, is one element of occultism where they may indeed seem to get it right. Understanding the human mind and our purpose for being in this reality. Because I also believe in continuous improvement of the self. Trying to understand our role and our relationship to others in this world. So when I talk about the occultist, they're not always Luciferian devil worshippers. Not always. I think the path of the occult would quite possibly lead most people down there, but save that argument for another time. Now, the book also indicates that the protagonist is being initiated. Talking about the biologist, not Lena. I mean, well, so the biologist is Lena, but in the book they call her the biologist. She's being initiated because the lighthouse is the major focus, but she doesn't go through her full transformation until she goes underground. Much like we see in the movie, but in the book, it's a different area. It's not an underground tunnel inside of the lighthouse. It's what they call the tower. And it's very confusing because it's not a tower above ground per se, but it's a set of spiral stairs that goes down into the earth. And when they get down there, they see this bioluminescent writing on the wall created by creatures is the right word, bugs, whatever. And this writing is being orchestrated by this creature referred to as the crawler that the biologist has to confront before her annihilation of being absorbed into the light. Very similar to what we see Dr. Ventress go through in the film. But it's kind of confusing because in the book, she doesn't seem to like die from this like Dr. Ventress does. But she does go through this sort of painful moment of being absorbed by this light that is inside of her. I think she calls it the brightness in the book. Now, to me, it's very curious that in the book she calls this a tower, because when we look at the tarot cards, there is a tower card that indicates crisis, destruction, and liberation. Again, this is all part of the process for the biologist, for Lena. Same concept in the movie as the book. Now, in the film, you hear the four women debate the strategy of how best to get out of the shimmer. Some of the women want to go back the way they came, but Lena argues that the best way out is to go through the Shimmer to the coast. Again, another veiled statement in the process of transformation. We could understand this intuitively if we take a look at starting a new diet. Right? It's January. We're all starting a new diet. You're going to go through sugar withdrawals. An actual physiological effect. You'll have headaches, be tired and such. But it's the only way out of the old unhealthy way of living. The way out is through. You have to keep going. Forge that path. Put that soda down. Now, Nine Inch Nails has a track titled The Way Out is Through. Not so ironically, right? And the lyrics, they restate these existential struggles of transformation. They go a little something like this. All I've undergone, I will keep on. Underneath it all, we feel so small, the heavens fall, but still we crawl. All I've undergone, I will keep on. Now, another idea behind this philosophy is to change one's entire outlook of the situation. Charles Manson, again, we're going to talk about Charles Manson. He once said, the way out of a room is not through the door. Just don't want out and you're free. And this is what happens in the first book of the Jeff Vandermeer's trilogy. Lena, the biologist, not Lena the plug, decides she doesn't even want out of the Shimmer by the end of the first book. She finds a certain amount of freedom staying within it. She wants to find alien Kane or whatever. Now, and this idea that Manson was talking about is something he picked up in prison. And I read this in Adam Gorelli's book, The Shadow Over Santa Susana, which if you haven't listened to my interview with Adam Gorelli, check it out. It's really good. It's his last interview he was going to do about Charles Manson. Right here on the Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture podcast. Anyways, in the book, Adam Gorelli wrote, prison life took the form of monk life meditation, as from his cell, Manson is able to project the entire universe. Upon his late 1960s prison release, Charlie discovered that the world was illusory on both sides of the fence, the grandest illusions being inside and outside. One could be as free in prison, he observed, as a slave to the outside world. Very strange, right? To get back to the film, Lena, she is the sole survivor, of course, and her understanding of the way out by going through is part of this success. Now, to me, it's also curious that she makes a point to say how heading back to the coast is a key to this liberation. Now, why did I find this interesting? Well, I had recently listened to an interview with and I can't recall for the life of me where I heard this. I don't remember if it was an interview on a podcast or something I was watching on online. Otherwise, I would give you an exact specific name, but I thought it was some kind of occultist being interviewed. For some reason, that sticks out in my mind. And this occultist was talking about how being in nature is one way to have a sort of meditation. It has this ability to sort of overwhelm the senses, much like you see with the Apollonian rituals. It has the potential to unlock some inner understanding of reality. And this could explain why the ocean has such a profound effect on so many people. A lot of people are either into the ocean or into the woods. Same idea on both spectrums there, right? To me, it's definitely the scene of Lena's transformation, because that's what she says. She says the coast is the key to liberation here, to get out of here. So she kind of understands this too. Finally, let's wrap this up here. The best for last. We can't ignore the alien component of this film. When Lena makes it to that tunnel underneath the lighthouse, she confronts this extraterrestrial force which unleashes her black doppelganger. Now, as I mentioned earlier, the two have their struggle dance. And I believe at this point she transfers the consciousness, and at least partially she transfers consciousness. Maybe not entirely, you know, how would I know? That's just what I glean from watching it. And watching this reminded me of Aleister Crowley's description of approaching the abyss. That is, of course, the hidden realm known as Daoth on the Kabbalistic Tree of Life. And the initiate must confront the guardian entity of this realm. This guardian entity is known as Corone Zone. And if the initiate is not prepared to confront this entity, it will destroy them entirely. Full annihilation. If the initiate is prepared, though, it will get a full enlightenment. And the initiate will experience full destruction of the ego. Again, this is an occult desire. You see this in Alejandro Jodorowsky's The Holy Mountain. The initiates, you can see them actually burning up their egos. Now, to me, this is quite possibly the most terrifying alien film, because it's not clear what this alien force wants. I mean, does it want anything? Is it just mirroring us in order to more easily enter the real world and assimilate beyond the shimmer? To me, it seemed it was refracting all of the genetic structures within the shimmer for some kind of purpose. And I argue that it was a form of panspermia where it's seeking to colonize a new planet. And it found a way to hybridize the DNA of the highest form of animal on the planet, humans. And it's going to evolve as far as it can, removing all of the supposed inferior humans. This will ultimately supplant the human forms and make a new planet of aliens that only appear human. So, it's a nihilism fantasy being enacted on the screen, where God's creation of humanity is destroyed by an alien force that is stronger and evolutionarily superior, because the occult god is an alien god. So what do you think? That's what I think. Let me know what you think. You can go to IlluminatiWatch.com, leave me a comment, hit me on the socials. This is by far one of the most fascinating films I've ever seen, so big ups to everyone who kept bugging me to watch it. Sorry it takes me so long. Got a lot of coals in the fire, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, it was a great movie. I'm glad I finally got around to watching it. I do want to thank you for your time. Leave a review. Leave a review on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you can leave a review. We got to get them reviews up, folks. And if you're on the Patreon team, super big ups to you. You're making this happen for everybody. So thanks from me and all of the free feed parasites that are listening. Just kidding. I would never call you a parasite. Take it easy. No, but the Patreon supporters are what keeps this thing funded, in all honesty. If you want to consider joining, patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher. I do appreciate everyone's, you know, and if you can't, that's totally fine too. Just leave a review, share the show with other people. Let's open up some minds, get people talking, start a new dialogue. Less superhero movies, more thinking movies for 2019. All right, thanks again for your time. And as always, stay woke.